Yeah. Hey, I just want to make sure you guys knew that we had Joe up here with us this weekend. That he's up here at the front. Rick showed that yesterday. I said, hey, can we just put him right up front with us?
Yeah.
Just put him right up here so it's a good place for him to be. But I understand this was just the lower half of Joe. So. I don't know what that means, but whatever.
Thanks, Mark, for reading. I just love listening to a Jersey guy read the traditions. It's like, like do the right thing, okay? Okay? You hear what I'm saying? Do the right thing. No. That was classic.
A couple of Goombas up here doing all that work, right?
Yeah. Wow. Oh,
yeah, we're good, huh?
We're good. You just talked about the spiritual experience. I mean, really, it's like, just think about it. Just unplugging and just sitting still and sitting down. And that's what we're going to talk about now, the spiritual experience. Hmm. You know, what does that mean? How do you get that? In the back of the book, there's a great little appendix called The Spiritual Experience. And for me, it's brilliant. I'm going to let you go, but I just, we're gonna walk down a path that we don't know where it's going to take us.
It worked the last hour. So there we go. So in the big book, in there is a solution. You know, the book starts to give us clues about what we're talking about here. One of my favorite pieces in the book is on page 19. We feel the elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. A lot of people miss that coming to AA. They think that's the deal. That's why I came here. I just need you guys to teach me how to drink sociably, how to drink like a gentleman. How do I stop so I don't keep getting in trouble? It's not the drinking that's bothering me. It's the consequences that are killing me. You know, that's the part of it. How can I drink and not have consequences? That deal. And you know, the book talks about a couple more spots over. It talks about elimination of drinking is just to be. We think a man's not unthinking when he says elimination of drink. He says, like the man that comes out of the cellar. Don't see anything wrong here, Ma, after the tornado. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing? Like, if I just stop drinking, that's good enough. That's good enough. And you know, it talks about this idea that drinking's just a symptom. Bottles were a symbol. Something different than that. Alcoholism is something different than that. This idea that I have this, you know, this spiritual malady coupled with a physical allergy combined with a mental obsession. And it's this crazy idea that's this obsession, spree, remorse, repeat. Silkworth talks about it. You know, when an alcoholic gets restless, irritable, discontent, you know, they get the sense of ease and comfort. Not real ease and comfort. It's like seemingly. Sense is a good word, like seemingly. Seemingly hopeless state of mind. The sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks they see others taking with impunity, without consequence. So this restless irritable, the malady drives the obsession, which pushes me to drink, and I'm in this. And so we talk about that drinking is but a symptom. It's the flower on the tree. And so what's really wrong with me? I suffer from alcoholism. What has everybody told me my whole life? Look, if you just don't drink, and they'll give you helpful suggestions. Non-drinkers give you great suggestions, right? Just quit drinking tequila. Try white wine. Just do that, right? Right? Alcohol in any form. That's what the doctor's opinion says. But that sounds like a good idea. If I don't drink tequila, that's probably a good idea. I'm just going to drink beer. Right? Or they give you other good things. Look, just don't drink during the week. Just drink weekend. And they mean well. And that sounds good to a guy like me because that's good. I'm not going to drink tequila anymore. I'm just going to drink beer. I'm just going to have a beer. I'll start Friday night, have a beer. I drink two, three beers. Guess what happens to me? Different guy starts making decisions in my life. Once I add alcohol to this system, different guy starts calling the shots. I forget I wasn't going to drink tequila. I start drinking tequila again. Right? And here I go again. I'm down the road again. So it's that vicious cycle. It's all driven by this malady. It's just driven by the malady. Silkworth talks about, Wilson talks about on page 52, the bedevilments. We hear that again and again. And Bill begins to talk about it, and there's a solution. He begins to lead us to the path that, hey, What we really have wrong with us is something, you know, something different. This, we got to have some kind of spiritual solution for us. We agnostics, it talks about if you suffer from this, only a spiritual experience may be able to help you. Only. So what is that? What is the essence of a spiritual experience? And it talks to us here on page 25, and there is a solution. At the bottom, they footnote it. Footnote it for us. It'll just come out and tell you. Footnote it. Fully explained, Appendix 2. Who reads footnotes, for God's sakes, you know, when you're new? I'm not. It's like trying to read the doctor's opinion. I don't read the Roman numerals. That doesn't have anything for me. I go right to page 1. Matter of fact, I might just go to page 164, get the wrap-up. That's really all I need. I need to just see how it ends. I just need to know what happens there. But if footnotes, if fully explained, Appendix 2, right, talks about there is a solution. Footnotes. Then on page 27, because they know you didn't get it the first time, they footnote it again with an asterisk. For amplification, okay? Not more than fully explained, for amplification. See Appendix 2. Well, alcoholics don't do anything after twice, right? So they wait all the way over here to more about alcoholism on page, oh, that's not my reference, on page 47 in We Agnostics. So that was a whole chapter ago they were talking. But now what do they say? Please be sure. Please be sure to read Appendix 2 on spiritual experience. So they're almost begging us. See it further amplified. Please. Please read this on the spiritual experience. And Wilson and the first 100 in the spiritual experience, they talk about what is it? They talk about it's sufficient to overcome alcoholism. Well, what is it? I have alcoholism. I can't drink. I can't not drink. I'm a dilemma, right? That's what we're talking about. A dilemma, difficult choices. Go to the bitter end, accept spiritual help. That's a dilemma for people like us. That's why it puts that in there. It says it more than once. It talks to us about that. Go to the bitter end, accept spiritual help. That's a difficult choice for us. You know, that's like being at Walmart. You got guys out there on the Walmart that are like survey people. You put a survey out like this. Excuse me, sir, Mark, would you like to go to the bitter end, or die an alcoholic death, or accept spiritual help? Most people come through, spiritual help. Alcoholic comes through, sir.
How bitter.
Yeah. What do you mean alcoholic death? What are you talking about here? What's that going to look like exactly? I need to know what that's going to look like. It's a dilemma. It's equally bad choices for us. None of them sound like really good choices for us. Difficult choices for us. What is that going to look like? Because, you know, when you're new, you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, talk about a spiritual experience. I'm going to have to go sell flowers at the airport. That's the first thing I think about. I'm never going to get to have sex again. That's what I think about, first of all. That's first thing. That's out. Spiritual experience. And what it talks about is, back in the appendix, it talks about a profound alteration to our reaction to life. That is the essence of a spiritual experience. And so I got to really know what's wrong with me if I want that solution. And people, good, well-meaning people tell us, just don't drink and you'll be okay. And everybody in this room knows what happens to guys like us if we just don't drink. See, for the average drinker, they don't drink, their life gets better. People I used to drink with, they quit drinking, their life got better. I'm an alcoholic. When I quit drinking, my life does not get better. It gets progressively worse. I get angrier. I get restless, irritable, discontent. The mind starts working on me. Alcoholism starts working on me. Have alcoholism, not alcoholism. And it just starts beating on me. And so what really happens for me when I really break down, what really is alcoholism? And I believe for a guy like me is I'm separated from God on self-will. I'm separated from God on self-will. I just believe that's the scenario. Why is that? Because I lack power. And then what does it talk to us about? And says, you know, that's the purpose of the book, to enable you to find a power by which you can live. It says a power that will solve your problem? Singular, not plural. Singular. What's my problem? Self. The book tells me that. Selfishness, self-centeredness, this is the root of my problem. Look around here. Some of these trees I've been here been forever. There's some big trees on this property. And these trees have weathered all kind of storms around here. So their root system has to go deep. So when the book talks about it's the root of my problem, it goes deep inside of me. It's not like I'm going to trim some branches. I'm going to be pure as a driven snow. Deep inside of me. So I'm separated from God on self-will. I lack power. So what I do is I manufacture power. How do I manufacture power? How do you do that? I thought these were assets. You people started talking about shortcomings, character defects, things like that. Like I lie to George. George asked me a question. I lie about it and I get one over on him. I feel a sense of power. You ever had that happen to you? Lie to somebody, get a sense of power, but it's fleeting. See something you want, you covet something, so you steal it. People say, I've lost this. You help them look for it. You're not a bad friend. You help them, right? And you get a sense of power. I got one over on them. I got some power. But it's fleeting. It doesn't last. And so these character defects becomes what appear to me to be assets in my life because they give me the sense of power. It's like drinking, restless, irritable, discontent. The sense. And so they give me a sense of power here. But what happens? What happens to a guy like me? It's false power. I'm generating. I get restless, irritable, discontented again. Yeah. Works for a minute, but I get restless, irritable, discontented. And what happens to me? I need ease and comfort. And so I get into this vicious cycle, restless, irritable, discontent. When I was 11 years old, I took a drink that worked for me. Unfortunately, when I take a drink, I have an allergic reaction to alcohol. I'm on my way to the spree. What does Silkworth say? Emerging ever remorseful. Swear to God, I'll never do it again. Separated from God on self-will. I lack power. I try to use maybe these character defects to give me some kind of sense of power. They don't work. They're fleeting. I get restless, irritable, discontent, and I'm over, and I'm over, and I'm over, and I'm over. And I'm in this loop, and I can't break out of it. And the book says, hey, look, lack of power, that's the problem. Lack of power is your dilemma. I've got to, if lack of power is my problem, what's the solution? Power. I got to get connected to something. I have to get plugged into something. How do you do that? How do I go from powerless to power? How does that happen? That's what it says. That's what this book is about. Sandy, because Joe's talked about Sandy several times today. Such a great member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Sandy used to say, the book isn't the treasure, it's the treasure map. It leads us to the treasure, the power. And so the essence of our steps in our book is designed to get us to the power. And look, I'm not making any kind of pronouncement about that. I'm telling you my experience. Your experience may be totally different, and I'm not trying to say what I do is the way. I'm just sharing what's worked for me. So take that with what I'm telling you. This is just what's worked for me. Don got me in the book, and he got me in the steps, and he got me to the power quickly. He got me through the actions quickly because he knew I lacked power. I need to get connected to the power. If you do that some other way, if you're however you do it, and if people it's working, that's the right way to do it. So I'm just telling you my experience here. You know, I'm not trying to sell you anything. I'm just sharing what happened for me. And when I got connected to the power, what happened? My life began to get better. It's the 60, 90 days, what's working for you, something like that. And so the essence of this spiritual experience is it's like if Joe and I could come here this weekend and say, okay, here's what you do. Here's the five things you do. If you do these five things, you'll have a spiritual experience. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. I used to have an old sponsor that would say that he was out hauling cattle one day and he pulled his trailer and it hit a low-hanging highline wire and he grabbed the trailer. And he said, I can tell you how to have a spiritual experience if you want one. If you live through it, you can have one, right? But what the book talks to us is about the roadmap to get us there, the steps we take to get us there, is how do we deflate self sufficiently to let God come in. how do we get to that spot? You know, and I think for probably for me and maybe for you too, when the book talks about being beaten into a state of reasonableness, I think that's one of the most profound lines in our book. I so identify that, you know, beaten into a state of reasonableness. Oh, Don would come every day and he would just ask me how I was doing, but he let whiskey do the job. He didn't try to pull me up short. He wouldn't try to convince me, hey, you need to do this. He would just offer me friendship and fellowship, which was what the book says we do. It's what it talked about. Joe read that a while ago back here. Offer me friendship and fellowship. And when I didn't want that, he would step out of the way and let me go do my deal. Let whiskey finish the job on me. And it says in there, the next line is probably my favorite line. It says, for some of us, this was a tedious process. Right? A lot of ass whoopings to get here, man. Just a lot of them. To be beaten into that state where I'm finally out of the dilemma business, I'm willing to listen to what you have to offer me. I'm no longer into that spot where I'm saying, alcoholic death, spiritual life, what else you got? Because that's right. What's door three? I need door three. That's what I need, because neither one of those sound good. And what alcohol does for a guy like me, it beats me where I'm okay with. I know what that's going to look like. I don't know what this is going to look like. I'm wanting to gamble on that. I got hope this will work for me. And that's really all it's about, is the guy in front of you, I hope what's working for you can work for me. This is the essence of the beginnings of a spiritual experience. Get in the car. Maybe the most spiritual thing we hear early in AA, right? Get in the car. I don't want to get in the car. Because, you know, when they pull up and they say, get in the car, we have questions. Where are we going? Like, you got somewhere better to be, right? I mean, nobody's talking to you. I'm living in a sober house. I got no job. I got no money. And you want to know where we're going. Like, it's going to make any difference to you, right? It's just get in the car. And in that car lies the miracles and the mystery of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not about when you get to the meeting, it's going and coming home. That's where all the juice lies. It doesn't lie. I mean, there's good stuff at the meeting, but it's like everything else in AA. It's the ride in the car with the people in there, because all they do is talk AA to you. And you just get fed AA. You don't even probably know you're getting it. You just get it. And you get it all the way there, and you get it all the way back. You go to Denny's, Millie's, wherever you're going, and they feed it to you there. And you say things like, you want to go to dinner? I don't have any money. Didn't ask you that.
Yeah.
Didn't ask if you had any money. Ask if you wanted to go to dinner. Would you like to go? Right? We say it a little kinder than that, but that's the essence of it. Yeah, I'm not worried, but don't worry about it. Come go with us, man. We want you to go. And so these simple things that we begin to talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous, little things that we do for people, little small acts of kindness that we begin to do for people, put them on a path for a spiritual experience, to be open to that. And I think there's a big key. I'm not open to the experience if I still have, you know, if I've still got some kind of plan and idea. And that's when people, I remember one time I'm in an AA meeting, and I got there early, and I was out in the parking lot, and this kid pulled up that one of my guys was sponsoring. And I said, hey, man, I was visiting with him. I said, well, you're here awful early. And he said, yeah, I'm coming to meet Terry. I said, what do you need to talk to Terry about? He said, well, I'm going to resign AA. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I said, really, what are you doing? He said, well, you know, he's about 27 seconds sober. Well, you know, my girlfriend and I have been going to church. And she's decided, I like that, right? So now she's sponsoring him. She's decided that we just need to go to church more. And I said, well, you don't need to wait around and tell Terry. I'll tell him. Because I'm a believer. If you got another plan or idea, you need to go run that out. You need to go run it out. I don't need to convince you to stay. You need to go figure out if that works for you or not. If it works, do that. Book says we don't have an exclusion on God. Somebody says, hey, I need to go do this. I tell you what I need to do, Cliff. I think I just need to go to the gym more. Go do that. I'm an encourager. I'm a cheerleader for that. Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. But if you ever decide you want to come back, no, you're always welcome here. I'm a big believer in that. Because I had to run out of ideas before this became a good one. As long as I got another plan. So I'm an encourager when people come and say, hey, I'm resigning. I'm going, okay. You don't have to type a letter or nothing. I'll just take it, right? It's okay. Because I'm a believer that I don't need to, because Don didn't convince me. He didn't try to persuade me that AA was a good deal. He offered me friendship and fellowship. When I wasn't interested, he got out of the way and let me Because whiskey, what does it say? Whiskey, John, in the 12th chapter, John Barleycorn is the great persuader. The great persuader. I don't need to convince anybody AA is the way of life for them. I don't know if it is or not. But if you get beaten into a state of reasonableness, then you're open to the possibilities for a spiritual experience. If you're as it describes it, we agnostics, those two, when you drink, you find that you can't control the amount, or when you cannot quit entirely, you may be suffering from an illness that only a spiritual experience can. So you got to ask people those questions. Talk to me about when you're drinking. Can you control it? Can you stop and stay stopped? Because we're in a room of professional quitters in here, I know. Joe, you and I, we're quitters in here, man. Mm-hmm. These people quit 1,000 times, right? We know how to quit. I don't know how to stay quit. And the only thing I've ever found for me is a total and complete surrender to a power greater than myself that has allowed me the opportunity to get sober, stay sober. So when we talk about this idea of the spiritual experience, this profound alteration to our reaction to life, that's going to look different for everybody here. There's as many experiences as there are members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love how it says that in our book, that we don't have an exclusion on God. You know, I love that. We just got a way that has worked for us. You know, we have a way that works for us. You know, not to say that other people don't. Salvation Army be getting drunk sober for years. That seems to work for them. That don't work for me. This is the only way I found that works for me, because I tried a lot before I got here. This is the only way I found it works for me.
Wow, we could just listen to you all that.
Whatever.
When you're talking about the car, I remember my own experience. I remember I had that 63 Falcon station wagon, and I was broke, and the gas gauge didn't work on it, so I just kind of assumed I could get gas every once in a while. And I got the sponsor now. It's three years sober, and I got a sponsor. And I'm driving down the road. I ran out of gas about 1 o'clock in the morning, and I called my sponsor. Because that's what we do, right? He says, what the hell are you calling me for? He says, oh, I ran out of gas. He says, give you a call if I'm in trouble. He says, don't call me, call AAA. What? He goes, yeah. He says, AA's not going to help you with your car.
You left off a letter.
So he came and got me, and the next day he came and got me again, and he took me down to the AAA office. He got me a AAA car. I says, I can't afford that. He says, well, pay it forward. Someday some of your whack jobs are going to need a AAA card. You're going to have to do it again, you know. You know, it's really, it's just kind of amazing that my whole car, now that I'm thinking about it, how that one particular car helped me find this spiritual experience. There was another time I was about 9 months sober, and I was my first year of sobriety was really not happy, joyous, and free. I used to always joke that I was happy, joyous, and miserable. That's really what I was, you know. And I was at a conference, and there was this woman named Grady O'Hare. I think she's dead now. She was the most foul-mouthed speaker I ever heard in my life, and the most spiritual. And it was the first time that I could actually see the two of them in one thing. And what I'm saying is that she carried a message to me that night. But I was done with AA, and I wanted to go drink. And I was at this conference, and I had my 63 Ford Falcon station wagon, and I left. As everybody was leaving this conference, people were like levitated, because this woman's story was so powerful. And I was done with AA. I just want to drink. And I'm standing outside, and I get out in the parking lot, and I can't find my car. And I just can't find it. And I'm just like standing there going, oh, my God, I can't find my car. And all these people are coming out and they're all happy. And I'm just like, just come away from me. I can't find my car. And then, I talked about last night, this one boob come walking up to me. And he goes, how you doing? And I go, I'm good. And he says, really? He goes, what's wrong? I says, I can't find my goddamn car. And he stood there and he started to tell me his story. Don't want to hear this, you know, and I don't know how long it went on, but it went on and on and on and on and on. Jesus, will you shut up? And he goes, I bet you drive a Ford Falcon. Well, how'd you know that? He goes, because that's my little Subaru over there, and the Ford Falcon's the only other car in the parking lot. I found my car, you know. I swear to God, and I'm like, Spiritual experience. He goes, how you doing with that drinking thing? What drinking thing? It's gone. Seconds and inches, Norm Alpa used to say. Man. Seconds and inches. You know, the person that you watch walk out of the meeting might never come back. But then you watch somebody else with a sense of joy that follows that person out and goes, is there everything okay? And they might go, I can't stand this, or I got to go home. My wife just called. Oh, okay, man, I just want to make sure. But just think about when you're in a meeting and you see somebody walk out. Is there something that was said that disconnected them from that spiritual experience? That's second an inch, just one person, you know. On page 23, and there is a solution. It says, therefore, the main problem with the alcoholic centers in his what? Wallet? Centers in his crotch? Centers in relationships? No, it centers in the mind. You know, it centers in the mind. And that's where that mental obsession is. That's why I was talking about that fundamental obsession can be overwhelming if you can't get in here. It goes on and says, we have found much of heaven and have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, which we had not even dreamed. Think about that. When Bill was telling his story, he talked about being catapulted into the fourth dimension of existence. Now he's talking about being rocketed into us. And I go, why was there a shift there? They always say Bill never wrote anything twice. But I think it's, if you think about it, when you're new, everything is loud and clanky. Like a catapult, it's mechanical. It takes a lot of work to get it to go. But when you're rocketed into that fourth dimension, it's an ascension into the now. For me, this is my own interpretation. It's like it's a power. The rocket becomes the power. A catapult, you don't think the catapult is destructive. The rocket into that fourth dimension is that power into the now. And it really is, for me, it's we have been have deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. This is that transition from the head to the heart. So that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. I worked for this law firm, I was telling him, for 27 years. And for the past 5 years of my employment, I got a new boss who I was a threat to. Therefore, she was my resentment. And therefore, it was like I needed a change, right? And I remember going, I talked to my sponsor, and he goes, well, why don't you do something about it? What should I do? He said, why don't you go check out another job, maybe apply for another job. So I would apply. And then I got asked to do for an interview up in L.A., and I didn't want to move to L.A., and I go, my God, what if they hire me? He goes, well, how do you know if they're going to hire you? He says, you just show up. We're talking about the number three again. He mentions the spiritual experience three times. Mm-hmm. Three times he mentions. So the whole number three, just think about the number three. There's something about Bill and the number three. And my sponsor says, why don't you go to the interview and then see if they invite you back for another interview. And he says, in your third interview, if you get a third interview, you will know whether you want to work for them or not. They might not know whether they want to hire you. And I got three interviews out of this company. And in the third interview, I started to smile. And the guy goes, what's so funny? I had realized that I could never work for these people. And I said, oh, there's nothing. I just had a great thought, you know. And then I went back and I went to the job that I hated and she hated me and blah, blah, blah. And I whined about it for the next 5 years. When I turned 62, they eliminated my position. They eliminated my position. I'd worked for them for 27 years, and I was out of work. And I remember calling Ken, and I go, Ken, they fired me. He says, ah, God dang it. It looks like God did for you what you couldn't do for yourself.
Zen.
I had no idea what I was going to do. I said, well, what am I going to pop, 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 pop? Yeah, there is, the old putt-putt, you know? And he says, just have faith. It's going to be taken care of. And I was broke. I wasn't ready for that in my life. And it was just like, and I was overwhelmed with debt. And I was afraid to talk about it. I think that's another big thing that happens in AA. People get in debt and are afraid to talk about it. It's so much easier. It's easy to get a credit card and then buy the stuff to keep up with the Joneses who are trying to keep up with the other Joneses who are keeping up with the other Joneses. And all of a sudden, people get in this overwhelming debt, and they're afraid to talk about it. And I remember doing inventory with my sponsor. He says, Ken, I'm struggling here. I'm in debt. He goes, but you don't have a job. I go, I know. What am I going to do? He says, well, just tackle one little thing at a time, you know. All the great finance people will tell you that. But when your sponsor tells you that, it's something different. So I start. I go, this is overwhelming. I won't be able to PO. Just tackle one little thing at a time. But, just tackle one little thing at a time. And I just kept tackling one little thing at a time and just knocking away at that debt. And then when the, remember when during COVID they came out with those stimulus checks and half the country was in outrage, the other half was going, I need it, you know. And my first stimulus check, I'll never forget it, I wrote my last payment. And I was out of debt. Not no job, no life. And I'm going, wow, this is a spiritual experience for me. This is good. I just said, this is what's going on. I need help. What is that? Three words. I need help. I need help. If you think about all those things, there's a transformation that happens after that. Getting into that moment, get rocketed into that fourth dimension of existence is indeed miraculous. But on the next page over at 27, he talks about ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of our lives, of these men, are suddenly cast to one side and completely new set of conceptions, motives begin to dominate them. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes that were once the guiding force of the lives of these men are suddenly cast to one side. That's step six. And a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. That's step seven. Everybody talks about the two little paragraphs in the big book. Step six and step seven are very small. It's like, is it really? But everybody knows the longer you're sober, step six and seven are really the fulcrum to emotional sobriety. If you think about it as on a seesaw, right in the middle of is the fulcrum, and that's where you find the emotional balance. When I go, my ideas, emotion, and attitudes, I need to change those attitudes so I can actually find the happy, joyous, and free. Ideas, emotion, and attitudes, it's three. Happy, joyous, and free, it's three. It's just an amazing process where you can find in that moment where you find the balance, everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. This morning, I can't remember the guy that did the meditation. I think one of the last three words he said, and I'll never forget, I'm sitting there, he says, it's going to be okay. That's four. We'll make it three, okay? But he said, it's going to be okay. And it just hit me. It was really like, think about it. It's going to be okay. That's a spiritual experience. But when you go, yeah, but... You know that great line, everything after the but is bullshit. Think about it, because that's right back to the main problem the alcoholic centers in his mind. And if you line up the 12 steps on your arm, if you want to be like real dramatic, you know, it's like get on the cross, so, and you number them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Right in between step 6 and step 7 is this. It's the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind. But in its essence, the balance of life, and that's what the spiritual experience is. We're gonna read that in the end, and you're gonna see how much that experience of getting into the moment, getting into the now, is a journey. That is the journey. It's like, wow. How do I get what you got? Do you do what you do? You gotta have your own little power. If we were to disconnect everything in here, there'd be no power. Would we still continue? Sure. If I was to pick up a drink right now, I would disconnect from the power, from the source, and I would be rocketed back into hell. I know, into that oblivion that it talks about. Think about it. It's just an amazing way of life, you know. But here we are.
I have something for you.
I know you do.
And I'd forgotten about it till you said that. So if you stumble across something in the book and you think, what did Bill mean by that? If you'll go do some research, you can find it. Because Bill wrote letters on almost everything. I got you.
I got that too.
You do?
I got it. This is good.
Yeah, yeah. So this is, so in April of 19, probably earlier, it's probably in May, March of 1958, a lady named Marjorie writes Bill Wilson and asks him the question, what did you mean by being catapulted? And so Bill writes back, Dear Marjorie, thanks for the glimpse you gave me of you and your AA life. This is how he always writes. Letters like yours make me very grateful, though of course my part in all this is grossly overrated. You know, Bill trying to just distance himself from being the guy they put on the pedestal, so he's distanced himself. Concerning the meaning of the expression, I was soon to be catapulted into a what I like to call the fourth dimension of existence. I do think that one was pretty obscure. I can't blame you for not understanding it. What I really meant was this. I was catapulted into a spiritual experience, which gave me the capability of feeling the presence of God. Where can you feel the presence of God? In the moment. If I'm in tomorrow, if I'm in yesterday, you know why I get afraid when I'm in those places? Because I'm all by myself. I get out in the future, when I get to thinking out there, what's going to happen? I need this to come out. I need this to work out this way. I'm all by myself. How about in the past? Coulda, woulda, shoulda, regret, shame, remorse. I'm out there all by myself. God only exists in the right here, right now. So he says, I was catapulted into a spiritual experience which gave me the capability of feeling the presence of God, his love, and his omnipotence. And most of all, his personal availability to me. Of course, this is the ABC of the conversion experience, something as old as man himself. So maybe an awareness of God and some sense of relation to him constitutes a fourth dimension. Hmm. At least this was true for me, who had no belief or such sensibility whatever. I hope this clears this thing for you. I just made it too hard, I guess. And so Bill Wilson, writing into this idea of spiritual experiences, the moment, trying to get to the moment, it's the toughest spot for people to get to. Toughest spot for me to get to is here, right here. How to experience the now, how to be in the present moment. So on page 52 of the book, just before it talks about the benevolence, it says this: is not our age characterized by the ease with which we discard old ideas for new, by the complete readiness for which we throw away the theory or gadget which does not work for something new which does? How many people have one of these? Nobody, just me. I guess I'm the only one, right? Shocker. So I don't even know how to work this thing. I got some basic ideas about it. I mean, what I need is a phone and a calendar. That's really all I need this thing to do for me. Emails, that's kind of nice. But it has all kind of apps on here. It's got everything. Got my pictures on here. Right, Marty? We're taking pictures. It's awesome. It is all kind of stuff. Most stuff I can't even operate on here. But when they come out with a new one, I got to have that. I need that. I don't know how to operate all this one, but I need that. So I'll upgrade my material life. Now here's the ponder. Why won't I have the same readiness to upgrade my spiritual life? Why don't I have that kind of readiness? Why don't I attack that kind of fervor in my spiritual life? Why don't I want to upgrade that? Why don't I want to uptick that? Because that requires a little bit of work on my part. And, you know, that's when I remember when I came to Don when I was new sober, and he talked about service work. There's two problems with service work when you're new: service and work. That's the problem. Right? Those are no good, Joe. They're just not good. I have an aversion to that. Why? I'm lazy. I don't want to do work. But Bill talked about in his story on page, because I think this is really important for a guy like me, and I need to read and reread this over and over again for a guy like me to totally absorb how important this is. It says on the bottom of page 14, faith without works was dead, he said, and how appallingly true for the alcoholic. Okay, get ready. For if the alcoholic failed to perfect, make better, and enlarge, make bigger, his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive what? Certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again, and if he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. And so in order for me to, having this, what 12-step promises me, having an awakening as a result of the steps, that's not the end game. There's more here. We want to talk about this 12 step and, I get an awakening. I'm going to tell you, I bet you, I'm looking around the room. There's a lot of sobriety in this room. People have been here a long time. You can tell, give us example after example after example who people have come to Alcoholics Anonymous, came here, did the work, have an awakening, and they walk right back out the door. The deal here isn't having an awakening. Yeah, it's what we're looking for, but it's not the end game. The deal here is to stay awake. It's to stay awake here. How do you stay awake? It's what Joe talked about. There's work involved. I have to do some things necessary for me to stay awake here and have this really good life, this perfect program that's been given me. In order for me to do that, I have got to take it upon myself, some work and self-sacrifice for others. I mean, if I could just get sober, go home, and you know, God shove hot dogs through my keyhole, that would be great. You know, what I want is to go home and have mailbox money. You know, I want God to start sending me envelopes with checks in them that cash. That's what I want. It doesn't work that way. It says God does for us what we cannot do for myself. If I want to pay my bills, I got to go to work. That's what I got to do. If I want to enlarge my spiritual life, I got to go to work. I've got to do some things. Book says we engage in this, you know, in the We Agnostic chapters, we engage in worded talk, we read spiritual books, but there's a spot where I got to put the rubber to the road. I've got to put it to practical application. There's a great book that came out, and Joe's got it. I have it on my iPad. Don Majors wrote it, and Don was here. I saw a picture. He was here with Kip, right? And Don wrote this book. And what Don did was there was a series of, he and two other guys made a commitment. They would read the 24-hour book and exchange their thoughts on it. Those two guys dropped out, but Don kept writing. And they, you know, Don passed away last year, and he used to send it out every morning, a text. He would send out his thoughts that he had compiled over the years. And they put it in a book, and it's a phenomenal book. It's called Stumbling in the Right Direction. I think that's wonderful. Because that's what spirituality looks like for me. I'm stumbling trying to figure it out. I'm stumbling trying to get there. If it was a perfect straight line, it's kind of how we kind of, sometimes I think for new people, we make the steps seem so linear. You do this, and then you do this, and you do this. And it's really like helter skelter. I mean, you know, I'm doing this, and I'm going down over here, and suddenly I get the, I'm out working with people, and I get the full impact of step two. And I'm 2 years down the road. I get the full impact of step two, step three, six and seven. You read six and seven in the book, you know what I thought? Finally, the free space on the bingo card. I mean, two paragraphs. I'm breathing through this one, right? I'm gone, man. And the rest of my life. I love that. You know, that's right in the middle where the mental, right where it hits me. It's the rest of my life. It's the whack-a-mole game. Bam. Bam, bam, bam. I'm out. But what does it do? Bob talked about, you know, the obsession to drink. It said it took him like, what, 3-4 years for it to leave him? Kept him on his knees. Kept him working with other people. Bill Wilson, relieved immediately. But he was the idea guy. He had to have the clear thought in order to put this together. Bob, down in the trenches. I got to keep working with these people. I still want to drink. So he's in the trenches working. And the most spiritual of the two was Dr. Bob. But yet he was the guy that the obsession didn't leave right away. It's an amazing story when you look at the dynamics of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's amazing. But yet somehow it works. So when I look at this stuff, when I think this incredible journey that we take, if it was a destination, it wouldn't be worth it. You know, if I checked the boxes and I got it, I'd feel shortchanged. It's the truth. Because every time I set any kind of goal for myself, when I get here, I'll be okay. When I get here, I'll be okay. When I get here, I'll be okay. Never okay. It's never enough, no matter what it is. But here, man, it's like a box of Cracker Jacks. I don't know. I'm going to keep going. You know, I'm still looking. I'm the guy that, you know, there's a pile of shit. There might be a pony in there. I'm getting in there looking, right? I'm going to dig it out. That's what this journey is like. It's about this adventure, this great adventure that we're on, this spiritual quest. I love that. That we're on this quest. And you know, when we arrive is the day they pat dirt on our face. We're there. We completed it. We're sober and we complete the quest. And the essence of that is how am I willing to toil to get closer to God? What am I willing to do in order to foster that relationship to perfect and enlarge, to continue to make better and make bigger? What am I willing to do? Those ideas that I don't know, this spiritual concept, two others. I was wrong. Oh, that's a tough one. My wife's still working on that one, I'll just be honest with you. This is she tells the story. I'm not taking her inventory. She tells this story. She says, she has such a, one of her defects is she's never wrong. It's one of her defects. First time she had to apologize to me, I was in court. She left a message on my phone. I kept that message till it died. Ray, sometimes I just play it, walk down the hall where she could hear it because I deserved a damn apology. Felt like I deserved one. I was wrong. There's great spirit. There's great humility and spiritual significance. And I was wrong. Not I'm sorry. I was wrong. That's a hard one. Another one. Another great three words. I need help. I need help. I don't know about you guys. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous with the idea that I need to know. I'm supposed to know. Where does that come from? I'm supposed to know. You know, whatever it is, I don't even know what it is. It could be a nuclear physics problem. I should know that. I should know that. I mean, I thought I should know. And to come in here with these spiritual truths, I was wrong. I don't know. I need help. I can't afford it. All those kind of truths. When I'm able to get to that spot, I'm having a really, really good spiritual day. But I'm not always there. I'm not always there. Some days I don't want your help. Right, I'm just going to suffer through it. I'm going to figure it out. Right? I can't say I was wrong because what will you think of me if I tell you I'm wrong? What will you think of me? I defend it, you know. And what I've discovered is not being wrong that's killed me. It's defending it. Defending I was wrong, right? Building a case against them. Right? I'm going to build it. I'm going to prove that I'm right. Right? But these spiritual truths all go towards my continuing spiritual. When Dr. Jung talked to Roland, he didn't say, well, here and there, once in a while, these people have a vital spiritual experience. He said, vital spiritual experiences. Plural. I count on them. I depend on them. I count on them every day. I'm looking for what's the experience going to be today. Where's God leading me today to do that? In the chapter, We Agnostics, it talks about, we could take the position that life is whirling nowhere into nothingness, or we can take the position that we're God's intelligent agents, ever advancing his creation. And I used to believe this about Don. I don't know whether it's true or not, but I believe that Don would get up every morning. I just like the way I tell this. I believe Don got up every morning, looked in the mirror, and said, God, Agent Don, showing up for duty today. And I don't know what you got for me, but I'm available and I'm ready. And he would go out looking for guys like me. That kind of idea. I'm going out looking for what God has for me today.
And I just love when you read that line about the spirit, you know, to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life and work and self-sacrifice of others. He could not survive the certain trials in those spots ahead. And I was thinking about the 12th tradition where it's, you know, it's the spiritual significance of anonymity is sacrifice. You know, we're sacrificing the material. And it's really like, and when you were talking about this self-sacrifice, I was thinking about our experience with Matthew Perry dying recently. Now, Matthew Perry was on a mission to get in front of the cameras and get in front of the radio and get in front of the podcast to talk about how Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12-step changed his life. And he was not practicing the anonymity of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hate saying this, but he may have done more harm doing what he did because now people are finding out that he wasn't sober all along. And that's what that whole spiritual significance of anonymity is. It's like, wow, I'm going to just do what I do. And nobody needs to know. And it's a simple little way of life. There was a wonderful book written several years ago by a Jewish rabbi. I just can't think of his name. I think it's called How Good Do You Have to Be? And it's just talking about the principles of Judaism. But in the middle of the book, there's this one of his parishioners, congregants or whatever, it came up to the rabbi. He says, Rabbi, I just want to thank you for the temple. It has saints changed my life. And the rabbi was like, oh my God, this is really, what is it that I said that has changed? Oh, I didn't want you to assume that it was something you said. He says, there's an AA meeting in the basement on Wednesday night. and he said, there is? He says, yeah. So he goes, I didn't know we had an AA meeting. And he went to the AA meeting. on the Wednesday night, and he did the same thing like the Dalai Lama said. He said, I went in and I listened to these people, and they are practicing what I've been preaching for years. They are practicing with humility and with grace and with dignity, and they don't want anything in result, no expectations. It's just effort, and hopefully somebody's going to come back. And then, like you said, I don't have any money, but so just someday you're going to, and pay it forward to somebody else, and don't ever expect anything about this sort of stuff. And it's just really, this one time I told myself, I think I tried to tell the story last night, but never finished it. I was telling my story down in Dallas. And when I get to these places, I talk about never fitting in. And then I walked into the room where I was going to be talking my story on a Saturday night. That's the big speaker night, you know. And I, oh, my God. And maybe they have expectations. I don't know if I'm going to, who's going to show up, right? So I just walked into the room, and I saw this guy sitting way in the end table all by himself, you know. And I went, well, I wonder what's going on. And so I went over and just sat down and said, how you doing? Oh, Jesus, I'm just a wreck, man. I'm around here. I can't stand it. It's always blah, 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 blah. So we just talked. We talked and we talked. We just sat. We were laughing and just wonderful way of life. I said, man, I hope you stick around. I hope you enjoy it. Man, I think I will, you know. I left, and I didn't think any other, told the story, and then I left Dallas and didn't think any of this guy, and didn't think I made a difference, and we never think we make a difference. And then I was out at the Atlanta International, and I was doing a little panel, and afterwards, you know, people come up and thank you, and you just see them all in the line, and they're all like, oh, this is really great. And I see this little guy in the line. It was about 5 years later, and he's just got this smile, and he waited till everybody was gone, and he goes, do you remember me? And I go, nah, sorry, I don't. I go, I was the little guy in Dallas that you sat and had a conversation with me 5 years ago. I was ready to leave. I was like, wow, now I know why I was in Dallas. Wow, now I know why I'm here in Atlanta. You don't have any expectations that you're going to make a difference, but we make a difference by being ourselves. That whole spiritual sacrifice of like, will you come to Wisconsin and leave Turks and Caicos? Oh, God. What are you, crazy?
The dilemma.
The dilemma. And I go, yes, yes. Because I know the sacrifice, the self-sacrifice that I take, the changing in Charlotte and sitting there for 4 hours waiting for a stupid plane to come to Wisconsin and get here in the middle of the night and go to a hotel room with shitty towels, you know. But that whole thing, because you know, I didn't know. Look at Dre. You know, and then to have that silly little applause before we get going here, and Cliff said it every time, this is embarrassing to me, but it's really not embarrassing to us. That's what love is. Yeah. That's the whole significance of humility. Dr. Paul on his desk, I don't know the whole thing, he used to have this plaque that humility is perpetual quietness of heart, never to be fretted or vexed, irritable or sore, to wonder there's nothing done to me, to think about nothing that get in it, and it's about just being at perfect peace when all around is a storm. Just think about what's going on outside. You know, I think you were talking about, somebody was talking about just like unplugging from the news, not reading the newspaper, picking up a spiritual book, just picking up a book and just giving it a moment. It's like, wow, what are you reading a book for? You know, everybody, there's something about the action that we take that gives us the joy of living. And you get these words that are just incredible. Not everybody is at the same place at the same time. You know, when Bill had his bright light experience, he wrote about that and he talked about that, and he felt as though that was detrimental to people that don't have bright light experiences. And that's why he put in the back of the book the spiritual experience. And I had all sorts of doubt about Bill. You know, Bill was, he embellished. You know, Bill embellished. He had to, he had what do you call it? Freedom of authority, you know, of being an author. But I'll never get it. So I was sitting in a meeting one night, and I heard this guy. There's a lot of people that don't believe, and that's okay. Just because if you're atheist, agnostic, you don't chase them out of AA. You just say, okay, what do you believe? Rather than, you should believe, what do you believe? And I heard this guy talking, he said, I didn't believe in his bright light experience. He said, I thought about it. He said, he was in a hospital for 3 or 4 days, and he had been drinking bathtub gin. Do you know what bathtub gin is? It's rot gut. It's nasty stuff, and he was drinking. And he was in the hospital, and he was detoxing in the hospital. And they probably had him in a room. They didn't have detoxes like we have now. And he said, just picture it. He's sitting in a room, and they closed all the shades, and they said, just go in there and just just dry out, you know. And then they're going, God, we need a bed. There's people that are sick. And this guy's in there, and he's just detoxing. And they say to the nurse, go wake him up. And you can just see this big, burly nurse going in and just taking the shades and go, shoom, and this light just shoots into the room, you know. And Bill's like, my God, I'm sober. I'm sober. I don't know. And I was like, wow, maybe that did happen. And Bill goes, I think it was a bright light experience rushing through my gut. And I'm like, I don't know. That's the way my mind works, you know. And Dr. Bob was like this practical joker. He was just, if you guys, young guys, you know, he got drunk one night. He went to Dartmouth, and he got drunk one night, and he got a tattoo that goes all across his chest, over his arm. This is back in the early 1900s. This man was a doctor, and he had a tattoo like people are paying big money for now. And he used to drive a 12-cylinder, straight 12-cylinder to Packard, and they said he loved to drive fast around Akron. You can just see him. You know, we've taken these guys and put them on pedestals, you know? And I go, oh, man, it must have been so much fun way back then, you know? Can you just see the amount of people that, and Dr. Bob was jonesing a drink. He was jonesing a drink, and they said, we got another one, Bob. Oh, God, I don't want another one, you know? And he did it. He did it for fun and for free. And poor Bill was around there doing all, and we all do it. Can you come? Yeah, I can. Why? Because, you know, there's nothing impossible in AA. The only thing, it takes a little bit longer. We're back to the T-I-M-E again. Nothing is impossible in AA. That's why I think that encouragement in the love is like, you got to encourage people to dream, especially the new people coming in. They're coming in younger and younger. Dream bigger and better, you know. Get an education. Do what you don't have to. If you want to be a mechanic, be the best mechanic you can be. You want to be a cook, be the best. Don't knock them down. Go, oh, no, you need to do this. Encourage them just to be themselves. And that's what I think he talks about, that fourth dimension of existence. And it's self-sacrifice. It really, really is. And coming to meetings and listening to endless fifth steps. And I'll never forget my sponsor, Bobby, said, Joe, you never really complete the 12 steps until you've heard somebody else's fifth step. Until you sit down, and you know how painful it is, your first one, you're trying to be all good and everything, you know. And they're really, really boring. And then I did this, and I'm like, oh, really? Oh, that's great. Oh, Jesus. How much time is left? How many? And you're looking at the pages. Oh, my God. You know? And I'll never forget the first one I ever heard. It was nine hours long. 9 hours long. And I'm sitting there going, oh, I'm really being of service now. God, will you hurry up? And then he was done, and I said, is there anything else? Yeah. Yeah. And he told me, you know, it's always something we touched, fucked, or sucked, one or the other, you know, it's like, and I went, oh my God, really, I wish I had asked you that first, this would have been done really quickly, you know, we avoid that nugget, that one that's gonna, like, the one you want to take to the grave is the one you should ask for first, because it's like everything else will just be, and I go, wow. Thank God I was here for this, you know? Thank God, because that's the experience. Do we want to read the spiritual experience?
Yeah, but I want to say one thing. I'm going to let you read it, but I'm going to read this, because this, you made me think of something.
You're kidding.
In and of itself is dangerous. So let's just say for a minute that did happen, Bill's experience. Let's just go down that rabbit hole. Let's just say that did happen. Let's just say that the nurse threw it open and hit, my God, it's a bright light. Let's just say that happened. So let's just read this. And I love how Bill writes, by the way. I felt lifted up as though the great clean wind of a mountaintop blew through and through. I bet every time Bill told that story, the light got brighter and the wind blew harder. Don't you know that? Fight it off. God comes to most men gradually, but his impact on me was sudden and profound. How many people here got a sobriety date? How many people had that kind of experience? One, two.
Two, three.
But you said you had a sobriety date. Those of us who didn't have that, you have a sobriety date. So wouldn't you agree that God's impact on you was also sudden and profound. You just took you a while to figure it out. It took me a minute to figure out the sudden and profoundness of it. But I think the miracle, assuming that Bill Wilson had the nurse throw open the blinds, I think the significance of the experience is this. For a moment, I was alarmed to call my friend the doctor. Now, Dr. Silkworth was a neurologist by trade. He was a neurologist. He worked with 15,000 alcoholics had seen come through. He couldn't find a job in the Depression, and Charles Towns hired him. So I want you to think about your scenario. All the people that he's seen, all the drunks come through, they're telling him about the elephants and the spiders on the wall. And now here's Bill telling him about the bright light. And Silkworth says this, "Something has happened to you I don't understand, but you'd better hang on to it. Anything is better than the way you were." What if the doctor on that day had said this, "Bill, you're just in DTs, don't worry about it."
Yeah.
How many of us would be here today had Silkworth, regardless of what happened to Bill Wilson, regardless of whether that happened or just the nurse flew open the curtains, if Silkworth hadn't been touched by the hand of God and said, "Bill, I don't know, but whatever it is, you should hang on to that." It pivoted everything. Everything. Because thousands of people Silkworth had listened to talk about, like the guy who, "I don't like spiders and snakes." You know, he's getting that. He's getting elephants and spiders. But he hears Bill and he says something different. He doesn't pat him on the head and say, "Oh, don't worry about it, Bill." He says, "I don't know, Bill, but that's profound. Hang on to that." So what if it was? What if it was? The hand of God is still involved in AA because God gave Silkworth the clarity to say, "I don't know, Bill, but you should hang on to that." Didn't condemn him to saying, "Oh, just pat him on the head. Don't worry about it. You just go back to sleep. You're just seeing things." Didn't say that to him. He said, "Hang on to that. Whatever it is better than what you had."
Read. Yeah. "What do you think happened, Doc?" "I don't know."
There you go.
"The spiritual experience in the back, that's a promise in itself. The term spiritual experience," and I'm going to hold up my hand, and I'm going to tell you why at the end, my fingers. "The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening, I use many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of a sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first three chapters, the number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly ever have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle, which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arrangements, arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation, by Herbert Spencer. 14 times he mentions this transformation, this change, this radical difference, this spiritual experience that will happen. The spiritual is the big thing that keeps people away. They're so afraid of that word. But when you look at the root of the word, it just don't focus on the spirit. Focus on the ritual. It's the ritual of AA, the action that we take, the going to meetings, the reaching out to people, the making the coffee, the saying yes, the action that we take, the ritual of AA gets you that spiritual experience. Because the experience is what we talk about. If I think I'm going to go to a conference, if I think I'm going to go to a meeting and I don't go, I don't have the experience of getting there and going, wow, wow. Or the aha moment. It's like, wow, how did that happen? I was there and I heard the music. I heard it for the first time. I had this moment of clarity, and I've been a long time sober. I had this moment of clarity, and I just got here. That moment is the now. That's all it is, the moment of clarity. We have them over and over and over again. If you close your mind off to a spiritual experience, you won't have it. You'll never get it. And you'll be wondering, how do I get what you have? Well, get in the car. Where are we going? Get in the car. Doesn't make any difference where we're going. But when we get there, we're going to find something that Bill Wilson calls indescribably wonderful.
Yes.
And I hope you guys are getting there this weekend, because I sure am. Ciao.
That's it.